Dr. Ben Lawton, recording for the Oral History Project about the University of Wisconsin. You have asked if I can say something about my student days in Madison. This segment will be brief because my activities beyond survival were few. My decision to attend the university was not difficult. In those times, the University of Wisconsin was really the only option available to the person with absolutely no visible means of financial support. The decision was also reinforced by the fact that I had two older brothers in attendance. I entered the university in the fall of 1940. At that time, one of my older brothers, who was in pre-law, and I roomed together with three other people, one other one from our hometown of Viroqua. This group of five had an apartment on Murray Street, directly south of the University Club. I think it was 424 Murray, and I'm not sure that it exists at the present time. I suspect it does not. We had an arrangement where we had one big bedroom, a living room, and we cooked in the basement, which had a dirt floor. The agreement was that with five people, each of us would have the task of getting one meal a day, the evening meal, and hopefully in his shopping would get enough food so there might be something left for lunch and breakfast the next day. This was to be done on a total of $1. The weekend arrangements for eating were strictly on one's own arrangements. It was often that the daily shopper did not get enough food to have lunch the next day, and never was there anything for breakfast. For this reason, most of us carried Memorial Union coffee cups, which we would present at the Union as it opened up in the morning to get our, quotation marks, second cup of coffee. In my first year, I switched my major from pre-law to pre-med. I had observed the activities of one of my roommates in pre-med, and it looked like something that I could hack. I did not have any great inspiration for medicine at that time. My jobs the first year were several. I had a meal job at the Lorraine Hotel where I washed dishes and could eat if I so desired, but with our eating arrangement, more often obtain payment in cash. I also worked as an orderly at University Hospitals, then called Wisconsin General. I also started working at the Memorial Union in the check room, where payment was in meal tickets, which also could be sold for cash. At this time, I was able to survive financially and even was able to send some money home to my mother and two younger siblings. Paragraph. During the summer vacation after my first year, I worked as a powder monkey on a county highway crew. I was married during this summer, and when my bride and I returned to Madison, we had a one-room apartment on Johnson Street at the corner of Johnson and Murray. My wife obtained employment in Charlie Moy's laundry on University Avenue. At the same time, I had been able to get a full-time state civil service position at the Union, where for 48 hours a week, I obtained $75 a month. I managed the check room and ticket takers at the Union. A contemporary colleague at the Union was Oscar Damon, who went on later to be in charge of student loans and still later to be in charge of the athletic ticket office. Putting in 48 hours a week at my job plus a full pre-med schedule did not leave time for any extracurricular activities. Also during this time, my wife became afflicted with an eye ailment which progressed later to blindness. During this period, her hospital and physician bills very often amounted to more money than I was making each month. It was at this time that I became well acquainted with Miss Sarah Terhorst, then in charge of student loans. She was an extremely harsh appearing person who I found was extremely kind-hearted and many times came through with loans which could hardly be described as fiscally responsible. Following this sophomore year, I obtained employment during the summer months building Truax Field, where I was a labor foreman for a company from out east. I had two labor crews, one working from 5 in the morning till 1 o'clock, and the second from 1 till 9 in the evening. This was 7 days a week, and still my earnings barely covered our then mounting physician and hospital bills. And during this time, I also was taking Latin by correspondence, not having had the subject in high school, and at the time it was a required subject in pre-med. As far as influential professors are concerned, I'm afraid I did not establish strong relationships with many. I remember very well the Drs. Wolf in the Department of Biology as being excellent professors, though very demanding. In chemistry, I particularly remember Dr. McIlvaine, and Dr. McIlvaine also was known to be rather tough in organic chemistry. It was his habit to spring 8 a.m. quizzes unannounced, and inasmuch as my employment frequently kept me up working most of the night, I frequently was not prepared for these devastating quizzes. In fact, I went into the finals in the course with a 40 average on the quizzes, and I arranged to speak with Dr. McIlvaine and pointed out that I had had perfect scores on the 6 weeks and 12 weeks exams, and pled for him to disregard the morning quizzes. He agreed that he would throw out the quizzes if I wrote a perfect paper in the final. Apparently I did, because I obtained an A in the course. Paragraph. Now regarding my period as a regent. Paragraph. I did serve with 3 different presidents. I found Dr. Weaver to be a very personable and scholarly individual, but I had the impression that inasmuch as he had been hired to be president of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, primarily, that merger which had been imposed upon him was never in his heart. It was, of course, the difficult years of implementation, and I think that he did the best he could. But overall, he was not very effective. Paragraph. Ed Young followed Dr. Weaver, and of course, we knew him well. His having been chancellor in Madison and had the highest regard of almost all of the regents. He too was very much a quotation marks medicine person in quotation marks, and though he made every effort to promote the continued implementation of merger, I must say that great progress was not made in this regard during his tenure. I became very close personally with Dr. Young and continue to have the highest regard for him and his delightful wife. Paragraph. The hiring of Bob O'Neill, I think, actually marked a turning point in the merger concept. He too had excellent scholarly credentials and was a workaholic if I ever saw one. This perhaps was one of his weak points. He seemed unable or unwilling to delegate in any large measure, trying to stay on top of every detail himself. I do credit him, though, with instituting many changes during his tenure that are now being carried out. My overall evaluation of Dr. O'Neill was that he did a good job during a difficult time and did keep the mission of the system on the track and promoted merger to the best of his ability. Paragraph. Dr. Shaw has been with us only a year now, but my observations and reports about him are all very positive. I would not want to make any profound judgments on his performance at this time. Paragraph. The president's staffs obviously have a great effect on the president's record. When I came in 1976, Don Percy, Don Smith, Reuben Lorenz, and Bob Winters constituted the primary staff. Since I worked with Don Percy only this 1 year, I did not have a chance to form any judgment regarding his abilities. Don Smith, however, was impressive from day one, and I got the impression that he had guided the operation almost single-handedly during the difficult times of starting the implementation of merger. Reuben Lorenz was and is outstanding. Bob Winter was the weakest link in the staff. I think he had come up through the state system and was not equipped to handle the magnitude of duties with the merged system. I think that Joe Kaufman did an outstanding job in his short tenure as executive vice president. Paragraph. Friction between the assistant president and the Madison chancellor was obvious, particularly during President O'Neill's tenure, and the accusation that the regents did not understand the problem is perhaps justified. On the other hand, the personal chemistry involved had a great deal to do with it, and neither President O'Neill or Chancellor Shane distinguished themselves in the continuing battle. The AAU issue definitely was not fully understood by the regents, who had great difficulty in understanding the rather juvenile reaction that we observed from both men. In direct answer to the question as to whether this friction between the chancellor and the president is a serious problem, I would say that it need not be, and that the president will, in the future, I think, select a chancellor that will ensure a cordial relationship. Paragraph. The question as to what makes a good board member is a difficult one. I have seen a great number of regents, and there have been very few that are not basically good members. An obvious qualification is that the regent do his or her homework, and I found that almost all of them were very diligent. I think a necessary qualification is that the regent has to put the service as a regent first on his list of priorities. It cannot take a back seat to business interests or other distractions. So faithful attendance in itself is very important. I think that another qualification is being able to shed one's political stripes when he becomes a regent, and I found that this was almost universally true. I would point out that I lost more causes with Democrats voting against me than Republicans, and this was and is the experience of many other regents. I think to pick out outstanding regents is very possible without implication that the others were not good. At the top of such a list would have to be Odie Fish, and following that, Arthur de Bartoleden. From there on, the excellent regents are legion. But the names of Erdman and Hales come immediately to mind. The matter of regents serving under a governor of a different political party than appointed them is a non-issue. As I mentioned before, regents must be willing to shed their political stripes in assuming their position. I do think that it is helpful for the president of the Board of Regents to be of the same party as the governor. During my 11 years as a regent, I have never had a governor try to influence my decisions unless his advice had been solicited. I did enjoy a good relationship with Governors Lucy, Schreiber, Dreyfus, and Earle. Paragraph. As to Dean Cronin's concern that the Madison campus people feel that fees are being unjustly siphoned off to support other institutions, I would plead innocent. I do recognize the reason for the perception, but to consider it a willful result of making Madison suffer, I think is not justified. Whether or not Regents publicly express their feelings about Madison compared to public exhibition of any favoritism for Madison. I will say, however, that especially in the salary catch-up battle, that the many hours and days I spend in the Capitol in pleading the cause of the system with a plan that was obviously loaded towards Madison can hardly be considered a lack of support. Paragraph regarding specific questions. My stand on the appointment of Ed Young as president was and is that I was not enthralled, primarily because of his age. I liked him very much, but it was obvious that his tenure would be extremely short. We had, however, reached an impasse in our selection process, and I went along with it. The matter of the selection of a new academic vice president for Ed Young, when Don Smith was made executive vice president, was not an issue that I became involved in. The appointment of President O'Neill I supported wholeheartedly. I have addressed before the matter of the AAU issue. My views on the whole catch-up issue, I think, are well known, and do not require great elaboration. The early parts of the whole battle were carried out in the forum of the Special Committee for Faculty Compensation, on which Bob Knowles, myself, and Arthur DeBartleben all served. The plan that we later developed was essentially in conformance with the recommendations of that committee. The basic planning was done primarily with President O'Neill, myself, Regent Vice President Bob Knowles, and with Catherine Lyle. It was with the announced resignation of President O'Neill that the burden of catch-up fell pretty much on me. I would not be critical of President O'Neill in his early management of the issue. Taft's attack on me had essentially no personal effect. I was confident that I was doing what was best for the system and avoided any personal exchange with their organization. Whether Chancellor Marshall should have been fired for his maverick actions will probably never be answered. I personally would have fired him. Regarding my relations with President O'Neill, I can only say that they were cordial. He did talk over problems with me. He was not an easy person to know. I had the highest regard for him, though recognized his problems with personal relationships, particularly with the legislative and executive offices. Paragraph. I stood firm on the appointment of Dr. Shaw against great pressure because I felt that it was the best move for the university at this time. The public outcry was to be expected, and again I avoided any reply to some of the wild accusations that were made. I am confident that we made the right decision. Paragraph. Regarding what issues concern me most as a regent, I would have to place student access and therefore tuition as number one, and quality of the education we provide and therefore faculty pay as number two. I am grateful for the opportunity as a regent for me to repay the university and the state of Wisconsin for all that has been done for me in my career. I hope that I have left some lasting mark. Paragraph. I apologize for the quality of this recording. talking is quite difficult.